horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM, 201 Sports Zone, 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebeck.com. And a busy Tuesday that certainly at the start of it, when we were together 24 hours ago, it felt, you know, like the sale was going to dominate the news, and it certainly is a big part of what we're going to talk about. But the news in the afternoon, release from the team behind Justify, letting it be known that some filling in a left front ankle from last week, one of the contributing factors to backing off of him, and the swelling that was involved there and the heat subsided, and Baffert is going to get him completely checked from top to bottom appropriately. And of course, this has set off the usual response that that the internet fuels. Think the way to approach this is take it at face value. Elliot Walden quoted by Jay Privman, to go from a maiden winner in February to an undefeated Triple Crown winner in June has been an incredible ride. He is too special to the owners, our team, and all the fans that he has around the world to not be 100% healthy. As far as any future plans, they will be decided after we get him checked out. He's an amazing horse. We're blessed by his presence. And who would argue? I suppose the one unspoken portion of that is he is too special to the owners and our team. He's also too valuable. So let's let's include that portion of the equation, because it is a part of it. So we'll see. I know that people want to read into, oh, they were never going to race him. This was all planned. Okay, just relax. We heard the same things. American Pharoah. He'll the 3 seconds after the carnation blanket was on his shoulders, on his withers. he'll never run again, except that he did. We'll see. And we'll get updates as needed, as appropriate, as they come. So a little bit of a little miffed, a little, you know, disappointed if you know, those that were, you know, for those of you that booked trips to Monmouth or for Saratoga, well, you should come anyway. They're still going to run the Haskell. They're still going to run the Travers. Those races, they don't cancel them. It's still going to be, they'll still be compelling. In fact, argument could be made that they'd be more compelling without the undefeated Triple Crown winner, not necessarily as you know, as much of a hullabaloo, but that's okay. Give somebody else a turn, right? After Justify dominated discussion and headlines from basically about March, and gained momentum. Gaining momentum was also the order of the day Tuesday at Fasic Tipton. And the sale started, you know, okay, and then just kept gaining and ended up a very good day and some pretty interesting results and big names that got involved, and a lot of the usual suspects, some new faces, little bit of everything. And boy, Kenny McPeak, Ken got off the air with us, right? At what time Kenny was on? You just listened to the replay. So Kenny was on. Did I have him first? Yeah, I had him first and then Rick Violette. Kenny got off the phone, or he was driving, as he said. He was on his way to the sale. And then he proceeded to get heavily involved and bought at least three the last time I looked. Try six. Kenny McPeak, way more, a dozen. I'm scrolling down. It gets bigger and bigger. Holy cow. McPeak ends up with 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 purchases. Starting at $35,000 for Sky Mesa Colt early from Four Star. And topping out at what was the top? $250 for a We'll Take Charge filly. And what did we say to him about horses that he has particular ties to? And of course, the son of Take Charge Lady. This is out of a Dynaformer mare, chestnut filly, Gainsway inside. $250,000. So McPeak was out of control, and he bought for a little bit of everybody. Walking L Thoroughbreds bought three, and Harold Lerner with a pair, longtime client, and C&H Diamond Racing. They got three themselves, and then Kenny buying six that will probably be partnership that he puts together, the Magdalena and the Fern Circle and so forth with Sue. So, wow, I an active day. You know who else? Samantha Siegel was very active, and she brought home four, spending about $750,000, give or take. And she got an interesting collection, three colts and one filly, including a Will Take Charge for $260, and then a Munnings colt. I saw her tweet about that one. A Factor colt and a Street Boss colt. A little bit of everything. I take that back. Not a Factor colt. A Constitution colt. The Factor colt went to Mattress Mac, actually, from Clarkland Farm. But Samantha was busy. Hartley DeRenzo. There was obviously pinhook action. And at the top of the charts, we'll talk to Sid at the top of hour two, $520,000, the Flatter colt out of No Curfew, Lane's End consigned. And this one, the sale topper, pretty notable page, and actually comes with a name, Silver Tongue Devil. And Al Rashid Stable, David and Gordo, purchasing, and this one with Al Rashid. Kind of a nice flurry at the end of the sale that really boosted the numbers. And beyond that, there's so many interesting portions. If we look at the Lieblongs, they got involved. They bought a Strong Mandate filly from Denali. $435,000. Justin Cassie with a Violence colt. $370,000. Godolphin, a Street Sense colt. The Dilworths, $300,000 for an Into Mischief colt. And J.J. Krupe buying for the Violas, also an Into Mischief for $300,000. So those were the top six hips over $300,000, and really a very good start to the yearling sales season. Saw very encouraged quotes from Boyd Browning, just looking at the totals, $19.7 million for 196 horses through the ring, 86 were unsold. Median was up 75,000 from 70, and the average up from 93,000 to 100, almost 101,000. Good sale. And we'll talk about some of the other notable, some of the first crop results. We'll see what Sid thinks of these transactions. And just going through here, the American Pharaoh that sold, J.J. Krupe bought the one that Macmer Hall bred, the filly, $200,000 in a private sale. This one out of the Yanaguska mare, Young Musician. The other filly by American Pharaoh came out of the sale and was an out. There was any number. You know, Al Rashid, I mentioned Al Rashid. They bought a Bayern as well. There was also the Bayern filly out of Hot Roots that Woodford consigned, and that one was a that's a nice pop for Bayern. These are his first yearlings, so we'll get some input from Sid later. Carpe Diem, Commissioner, Competitive Edge, Constitution. Constitution had a number of six figure sellers, including the one from Samantha Siegel and also the colt that Bakari consigned, 113, $150,000 to Ken, to McPeak. So Constitution off to a good start. It's always fun to go through here and you know, note how the first crops in particular are received. That's a big part of these storylines. You know, the big names, you already know what to expect, right? I'm just kind of thumbing back down through, looking for any others that might catch the eye. How about Bill Parcells paid $180,000 for a Mr. Speaker that Taylor Made had in there. This was late in the sale. Colt, hip 347. That's a nice hit. Al Gold, I should mention. I actually was chatting with Al back and forth. He sent me an interesting chart to read, and Al Gold picked off a Munnings filly, $190,000. Palace with a number. Palace looks like may be well received. His first yearlings, and there'll be quite a few, I think, in the New York sale, if I'm not mistaken. Palace Malice had 250,000 plus sellers. Steve Young bought one, the filly out of Passé. And Aaron Wellman and Eclipse bought one as well by Palace Malice, $275,000. So good start to him as well. And, you know, so I talk about the sell-through concept, meaning, you know, horses that don't necessarily fetch big six-figure flashy numbers, but Race Day, the son of Tappet, Race Day had, I thought, a notable day, $30,000, $50,000, $80,000, $95,000. There was one that RNA'd, and there was one out. So that's a pretty good sell-through for Race Day. This was a very good sale, and gets our season off and running with the two-year-olds. We'll take it. We'll take charge. Had a very second crop and the three of his all over 230,000. A colt to Al Frasetto and to the Violas in a partnership. J.J. Krupe signed. McPeak bought one, I told you, obviously, and Samantha Siegel. 230, 250, 260. So good sale for Wilton. And a 190 that Contessa bought. Wow. Very good sale for We'll Take Charge. We'll get some feedback from Sid in hour two. Entry day for the weekend. And a lot to look forward to. We already have the field for the Dell Cap. Actually, we'll talk about the Dell Cap. And, of course, the Kent as well, the Hockessin. And there's one other. It's a four-state card. I got it here. It's here somewhere. The Indiana Oaks and the Indiana Derby will draw today. I know Dale Roman's heading there with at least one, right? At least one to the Derby. And the LoSalle Derby. We're looking forward to seeing what's going to happen on the West Coast as well. And there's no shortage of other action to get us through and get us ready for next Wednesday and Friday. Del Mar and Saratoga. No doubt. So there's your big headlines. The other story, of course, that continues to just captivate and to also provoke some, you know, fairly nutty suggestions. The Dwyer, the wagering, we will have at the bottom of the hour in about 14 minutes. We'll be joined by Paul Matisse. And we will go step by step through how the computer batch wagerers operate. And in this specific case, how the numbers worked and why it is very logical. There's a whole separate discussion about the appropriateness. In fact, I told Brian Spencer last night on Night School. Maury Wolf explained this 15, 16, 18 years ago, what was going to happen. He laid it all out, and everything he suggested is in play. You got to decide how much of this volume do you want, do we need. We'll discuss it with Paul. Plus Sid and much, much more. Kellen Gorder as well today. Seth Merrow and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here we go down a long dark road, same place where we used to go, and the words get stuck on the tip of my tongue, feeling cut off from everyone. Oh.
We're back at the races. You never have to talk Ron Paolucci into full assault on any big racing spots at Saturday at Delaware Park. Ron, bringing the house. He's got proper discretion headed in, as well as personal favorite Nikki, my darling, furiously kissed. Coming out of the Fleur de Lis, and we certainly will be tuned in and tied on. And Ron just sending out a tweet, and I think we may have some things figured out with Nikki. So she faces off with the other two in a nice group. The Del Cap that could very well earn itself right back into Grade 1 status, because there's any number of Grade 1 performers, most notably Elate, obviously, coming back. And, boy, here's a challenging scenario that Bill Mott and the Claiborne team and Mrs. Dilschneider, how often will you see a horse make a seasonal debut going a mile and a quarter? And that's what Elate is going to have to do here. So it she'll be a short price, obviously, and there's plenty of quality that lines up in here. Elate leads the group, and Mopetism shows up, Doug O'Neill, and the Redhams, and Doug never, of course, afraid to ship for a spot. You know, there was that try in the Gamely, and I kind of got drawn in a little bit into that concept, trying her on the grass. There is some grass in her page. She went back though to the dirt and the Fleur de Lis. She shows up here, and other than the Alabama, it's nice that you have a horse that has tried a mile and a quarter. You don't get that too often, obviously, and that's the portion of the Elate equation that would be encouraging. But that was right mid-season. That was right in the in the teeth of her campaign. So to start the season going a mile and a quarter, it's a lot. That's a lot to ask. You've got From the Rail, Teresa Z for the Violas, speaking of St. Elias, and Anthony Margata Jr. trains, coming off the prep win in the Obeah. Monmouth Oaks winner last year. So there's one graded stake winner. that's involved in the Dell Cap. That helps. Sneaky Betty, Super C Racing, a mineshaft filly who was third in the Obeya. And she's, you know, she's a useful allowance horse. This is deep water for her. She'll be a big price. Mopetism, of course, no introduction necessary. Making a 20th career start and third off the winter layoff. The La Cunada, her last win, and she was very good there, and it sort of, I think, made everybody think that she was going to be on her way to a big four-year-old campaign, and it's kind of been a challenge since then. So we'll see what Mopetism can bring, but here, you know, here's a grade two winner. So two graded stake winners. Luch with proper discretion. Our friend Anthony Cortarolo will send all three of the lime green and blue trim Luch runners. Proper discretion, discreetly mind mare. Coming off a pair of wins at Thistledown, including in the Petro Memorial last time, and that was a mile and a 16th, and she can add to the pace here. Farrell, we'll get to Farrell in a minute, expects to be the leader. Unbridled Mo, the Apple Blossom winner. So you got a grade one winner now, grade two, grade, you got three graded stake winners, including the grade one, then a late. Johnny V will be down to ride for the Brunettis and Todd Pletcher. A late needs no introduction. Jose Ortiz, fourth in the distaff behind Forever Unbridled and Abel Tasman and Paradise Woods. But before that, the Beldame and the Alabama. So multiple grade one winner. Farrell, it just feels like this is a bridge too far, doesn't it? Mile and a quarter for Farrell? It's hard to see. Now, granted, we'll see about the pace, but she's coming off the Fleur-de-Lis and the La Traienne, going a mile and an eighth and a mile and a 16th. Settled for seconds, and she always, you know, she almost always tries hard. And once in a while, the wheels kind of have come off. There are a few distanced efforts in Farrell's background, but feels like she's in good form now. Nikki, My Darling, is mentioned. Scott Spieth to ride. And then Furiously Kissed for Ron, who adds blinkers. Coming off the Fleur-de-Lis try. Before that, a nice third in the Allaire DuPont in the slop at Pimlico. And you know, and she was also third. That there was that very clever placing in the Apple Blossom, where she ended up third, and so grade one placed. So the point being, and of course, Farrell, multiple graded stake winner. So when it comes to scoring, when the American Graded Stake Committee gets together, the likelihood the Dell Cap could get its grading back, its grade one, and the grade two scenario may be short-lived, because this is a nice field, and always rooting for Delaware Park. The Kent, nice group of nine in the Kent as well. They're going to go the mile and an eighth on the turf. Looks like a pretty nicely matched field, and Doug O'Neill again. Remember Blame the Rider? Blame the Rider. A house horse, an ATR house horse that Doug O'Neill we discussed last year, the two-year-old Redham colt, and he finally put things together. It took him a while before things came together, and going onto the grass helped. The son of Jimmy Creed, he shows up in here on Tame Domain for Grand Motion in West Point. Tom Morley's got that 2-for-2 Carrick for Donegal. Won at First Asking and maiden 40, and then won a starter allowance and a pair of mid 80, you know, 80-ish buyers. Asmussen and Woodford show up with Hot Springs. This is a nice group. Christophe Clément, who, of course, we've told you has been red hot. Clément, Duc de Calais, comes in from France. Dunkirk, Gray Colt, and Gunnison for Kelly Rubley as well. So a very good, nice set for the Kent, and it should be a terrific day. And I think weather's been just preposterously good. And so between the two graded stakes, the Hokesson, which is part of the match series, and the Carl Hanford Memorial as well. That's the fourth stake. Should be a terrific day. Let's take a break here. Going to come right back because Paul Matisse is going to join us. We're going to walk through, help everybody understand what is going on with the computer groups and how they are impacting the tote, the late action. You know, we'll use the Dwyer as the discussion point because it's important that people understand this. And I mean, we certainly have been discussing it for years. Between Maury Wolfe and Paul's visit, they bring it up with Andy Serling. Frank Angst has written about it. I mean, we've had any number of discussions, but with every time this comes up, it's important that people understand. And then at some point there's a discussion to be had about how much access the industry wants to provide to the groups, to these computer groups. You know, I had Don Johnson on, and he was, you know, he was partially revealing. I mean, he wasn't giving away every secret of how they operate, but we all have to understand this, and you know, when and where there's a benefit. You know, nobody talks much about the occasions when the group is wrong. The groups go in the wrong direction, and we all get overpaid. But, you know, there's been this ongoing drumbeat of, you know, the value being sapped out of the pools, particularly the Exacta pools. So, Paul's going to join us 2 minutes here. Stay where you are at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss, staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous and call the shots. So, see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost.
Back at the races, 25 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll talk to Sid Fernando in a little bit. Hill and Dale, Pedigree Focus on the heels of yesterday's sale and Monday's Horses of Racing Age redistribution of talent, always interesting. Reshuffling of the deck and horses moving to other environs. Going to go back to Saturday, though, because the aftermath of the Dwyer wagering left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth and some outlandish suggestions and you know, teeth gnashing and hand wringing. And in fact, as Paul Matisse joins us to help explain this, because it's important that the public understand what we're dealing with when it comes to the computer batch wagering groups. And I think we've discussed it more here than almost anywhere between Paul and Andy Serling and Frank Angst and Maury Wolf. You've heard about this for several years, and there's a lot of moving parts to what happened Saturday, and there's a lot to figure out going forward. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going?
Good, good. Getting ready for, as I'm sure you are, I'm sure the rolls and rolls of purple tablecloths are ready for the backyard.
Well, yeah, I got a lot of work to do in the next week or so. Get ready for Saratoga, and you got me. I put this Firenze Fire thing behind me, and then you started texting and emailing me, and I could kill you and I could hug you because I don't have time to analyze all this stuff. But in the same breath, I'm glad I have, because I think there's a lot there. I know there's been a lot of, I've heard a lot of comments you know, what's the big deal? Let's get this over with. But I can understand that, you know, that outlook. But you know, this is something we should definitely be, you know, looking at. It holds so many compartments of modern day betting. It's a great exercise to look at the very least.
Agree. And I don't necessarily think we need to go to the origins of the computer betting, but a thumbnail sketch, Paul, from your perspective and your vantage point about the groups, the algorithms, what are they, how are they positioned, how many are there, how much impact do they generally have, and then we'll talk specific.
Well, we don't have a real, you know, a real good feel of that, because there's two separate entities. You know, there's ones that are, you know, deemed CRWs or CAWs, where they have their own number with tote, and they are approved by the TRB, and they're almost treated as a track themselves. And there's a handful of those. It's grown in neighborhood of 20 maybe nowadays. I think that's probably a high guess. But we do have a lot of other, you know, just regular day computer traders that are out there as well. They're using the file upload of all these ADWs. And so it's not an easy guess to figure out how many people are out there. But, you know, it's definitely a big part of racing, and I think when they first started, they were more about value. If you read one of Bentner has a book that's very technical, but you get the gist. that it's probability based, where they're just going through every, you know, the idea is to go through every horse and try to come up with a probability, and then the ones that are wrong bet, and the ones that are not bet. I mean, that's the originations of it, but it's evolved into something that's a little bit more complicated than that. And what you're seeing more and more of is, you know, these systems, the right word, but cleaning up every pool to be that there, when there's a mistake in a different pool, it's using the data from one pool to calculate what the odds should be in another pool. And you're seeing more and more of that. And they're using the data of the betting as a tool to determine odds instead of just pure handicapping. And I think that's the biggest trend. And there's no doubt that it's working. In the last year or so, you can definitely see that the computer players, even I think, have even more of an advantage. And you notice after races more about, you know, how did they know that combination? You know, what was so special about that combination? And you come to the conclusion that it's not probabilities or it's not handicapping.
And the way in which they find those opportunities, and it isn't one specific opportunity here, one there. They have created algorithms that are probing the probables, and then in the latest possible fashion, sending in the batch, the robotic wagers that bring the numbers into line with what their algorithms suggest. And the reason, Paul, for people to understand, the reason that they're doing this is the rebates. They're looking to break even or do better.
Well, I think they would do it even if without it. I mean, they're like everybody else. They're looking to show a profit, you know, and taking what's available to them. You know, I mean, that's definitely, you know, their goal, just like everybody else. Their goals are not any different than mine and yours, you know, and they're, they just have a little bit more firepower underneath them with the, especially in the recent times with this market predictability that you see in the stock markets and other, anything that's gambling or market related. There's no doubt that the programming has gotten much better at being able to predict where the markets are going to go. And, you know, they're doing it off of more just pure markets instead of handicapping. And that's kind of the tricky part now, you know, in this modern day handicapping. And so what we had on a situation like on Saturday, I think you used this term with me. It was kind of the perfect storm, because we had an old-fashioned probability, layout, where you had Mendelsohn, who, and Sehan for that matter, who were going to vary widely on everybody's models, including, you know, the everyday computer Joe, you know. This was not going to be a typical race, because if you didn't have Mendelsohn's dirt race in, from Dubai in your system, Mendelsohn was going to look 15, 20 to 1. My guess is that C. Henge was in the thousands to ones on some models. Yet other models who were probably a little bit more sophisticated had them the other way. And I'm not suggesting one way is right or which way is wrong. In fact, that probably the ones who had them closer to 3 to 2, I think I saw a tweet by Marshall Graham saying that he had him as good value when the race went off. You know, and you don't get much better than Marshall. And I think that's probably more indicative, but I think there was a wide spread. So you're going to have a lot of people, you know, looking to play into a race like this. Their models were going to cue off, you know, in a race like this. It was going, and it was, there was a lot of money being bet on a big day. You know, there was hype behind Mendelsohn. There was hype behind Noble Indy. Even Noble Indy's probably, his probability was probably varied. You know, a horse who gotten beat 50 lengths two starts in a row is not going to show up on some models with a very high probability. You know, it seems to me that he was falling between 3 to 4 to 1 on a lot of on a lot of people's lines. But I could, there's no doubt in my mind he was a lot longer on some other ones. So you had a real, and they were the two favorites. You know, primarily, and they were the two horses of main interest going into the race. So you had that, what you were saying, of like a perfect storm.
One of the things that in this era that adds to Andy Serling's value, Andy is incredibly efficient at identifying for viewers horses with about, you know, when they come on with the prattle 8 minutes, 10 minutes out, and the board has not fallen into line yet. Andy has monitored the double will pays, the pick three will pays, and he'll tell everybody so-and-so is 6 to 1 right now, but he's going to end up, you know, in the 5 to 2, 3 to 1 range. That was what was happening, certainly, just a couple of minutes out when Firenze Fire was still as high as 6 to 1 and then 5 to 1. And
couple seconds.
Yeah.
Couple seconds out.
Right.
However, you knew, because what you're saying, exactly. Now, that's another question altogether. I think that, you know, Andy's right to do that, obviously, and it's great that he points it out, because it's not everybody has the time to go check all these things at every second. So, but, you know, there was a time when that these doubles wouldn't necessarily fall right into place. And I think Andy's right to assume nowadays they're always going to, back to what we were talking about before. You know, this is sort of thing that is going to happen. And, you know, based on that, you know, the odds of that double, you know, Frenzy Fighter was 7 to 2, Noble Indy was 7 to 2, Rugby Man was 3 to 1, Mendelsohn was 9 to 5. So you knew they were going to tighten. You know, anybody thinking that he was a true 5 to 1 or 6 to 1 at that point, it was misleading. You know, so now to add to your perfect storm, you have this big bet made on Mendelsohn to win early, which set the odds in a way to show that you knew that it wasn't going to stay where it was. You know, right up to, you know, minus two flashes to go. So again, you got another situation where you knew that this was going to be a race where there was going to be a lot of action in the last seconds with the computer modes, you know, with anybody using a computer.
And in fact, Bill Finley has done yeoman's work trying to, you know, get the specifics, and you can see with certain wagers, the indications are, Paul, a 24,000 and change bet, an 11,596 in win bet, that has robotic wagering written all over it. And then there was also, you know, a big bettor that also plunged late, and the combination.
This is where it gets real complicated, you know,
right.
Because there's different views of, and you know, we're going with what Bill has here by word. I actually believe that what we're seeing is right, and there's been some talk that maybe that's not, but I believe what we're seeing is real. And like you said, the numbers that end in sixes and fives and whatever, they're completely, you know, robotic bets. We know that for a fact. Now the question becomes: Is the $60,000 bet made? You know, like, is that a big player making that bet, or is that a, you know, robotic play? Now, Naira probably does know that, and there's probably some more detail that might come out on that. Right now, I have a different take than what I've, you know, seen what other people have. I just took it without, before I read the article and analyzed it, that that the $60,000 bet was made by somebody that wasn't, you know, just making that assumption. But after reading Bill Finley's article, I don't believe that. Even though it's a 60,000 straight amount, it was done in a way and at a time that this wasn't a random person making this play. This was somebody that had done this before, had played, had knew the rules of tote, knew the rules of either queuing or file upload. All the bets went together. They were in $5,000 minimums, probably because it's a tote or a ADW rule. Some of these ADW rules have caps. Even the bigger ones have caps of $5,000. So I don't necessarily believe that it's a direct robotic play, but it's somebody that has knowledge of that betting and I believe is doing it off of some kind of model as well. I don't believe it was a random person who liked Firenze Fire or had inside information like some of the conspiracies have said, or even some of the people analyzing it who have a good knowledge of these things. I differ in that opinion. I don't think this was somebody that just made this bet on a one-time whim, either because of information or just in the manner that it was done with one horse out of the gate in a way where it had to be queued up and ready to go all together, had to have all that money in account. The chances to me of that being a random bet are very slim, even though I know it's a possibility.
Tim Ritvo, when we were together at Santa Anita before Derby, he said that he believed that he, in their dealings with these kinds of operations, that he's got them in a position where they're competing against each other. Is it a scenario, is it a reasonable assumption that these different entities just operating independently, they both went in at the same time and basically, not that they cancel each other out because they ended up on the same horse, but kind of a double whammy in terms of driving the price and cutting it in half?
I would say it's a possibility, but there's a couple options that could have happened here, and that's one of them, you know. And I think that they're better at predicting than what happened to make this go to 5-2, to overshoot like it did. But there is a possibility, because we're dealing with a little bit larger amounts and in a race where there was a little bit more going on than normal, that it's a possibility that happened in this case. That's one distinct possibility. And this is a person that was coming, you know, through Pete Fornatal, but somebody that had a good information in stock markets and the models that deal with the stock market, and they suggested that it was a mistake involved in the bet. And I find that a little bit interesting, which I kind of blew off initially. I didn't think that was, but once the Bill Finley article came out, the horse that always has intrigued me when analyzing this is that Rugby Man, who was 7-2 in all the other markets or less, and was clearly had to be used by anybody playing a model. Technically, he had the highest last race figure. He had run at Belmont. He had run at the distance. There was no way that he was going to be an outlier in this thing. And he drifted to 9-2. And I when I did my figure on what the real odds should have been and what the real pools were going to be, I came up with a number that was about 25,000 off between Firenze Fire and Rugby Man. So this is just a theory, but there's a 24,055 bet out there on Firenze Fire, which if you would If that bet was supposed to be on Rugby Man, everything would have lined up exactly perfect with all the other pools. And I don't, it could be a coincidence. That's why I'm not sure anybody really knows exactly what happens on, because there's definitely some different possibilities, you know. But the thing to take from all this is that this is normal. You know, this was a scenario, a perfect storm scenario. It had more money. It had a trainer who's won 50% for a meet, who actually won the race and won it in dazzling fashion. So, you know, it contributed to all the hoopla that went along with it. But I, if you analyzed a bunch of these races and you analyzed Tote, I think you'd see a lot of what's happening, maybe to a lesser extent, but you would see this. And I think for the everyday player who doesn't really care, it's another awakening, or, you know, another reminder of what's going on. This is who you're playing against, you know. And these are the things that are happening in modern-day racing. And for the people in charge, you know, it's another way, another reminder to look at this stuff, and are we doing it right? And, you know, there's this argument that the computer players are playing with, you know, my friend Craig Burnick. He likes to use the phrase that the robotic wagering players are playing with fixed odds and the rest of us aren't, you know. Is that fair or is that not? That's something that maybe somebody should look at. I actually think that it is much more complicated to say than that they have an unfair advantage. I think that, you know, they have every right to a pool. But I do think that maybe the pendulum's tipped a little bit in their favor, and maybe we have to analyze that. I think people have made the good points that these odds drops are not good perception, and just that alone may be a reason to maybe put a limit on the availability of what the computer... I think everybody's making good points. But it's a reminder that there's a lot there, you know, that this was not a, this is not just a one-off situation of, you know, I think there's this thought in racing that, you know, that everything's is, you know, it's a coup every time a horse drops an odds, you know, like, you know, I used to drive me crazy. There was a commentator in Hong Kong that would, a horse would go to 20 from 20 to 1 to 4 to 1 or something like that in the last two flashes. And he would say, oh, in the greatest coup of racing, you know. And he would drive me nuts because he would say it like once a card, you know. Like, and, you know, somebody should have taken him aside and said, you know, this is what's happening. It's not, you know, it's not... you know, barn knowledge. It's not, you know, jockeys not trying and that sort of thing. And that's a, you know, I'm not saying it didn't happen in the past. You know, it definitely did. In my eyes, it ruined harness racing because there was too much of it. But to make that leap that we're dealing in scenarios that were 30, 40 years ago, just because an odds drop and the horse won, you know, that's not the case, and it's almost never going to be the case. You know, so when the conspiracy theorists come out with, I've never seen anything like this in 50 years of racing, well, that may be true, but that doesn't mean that it's there's any shenanigans going on, or it's, you know, the Great Barrington Fair in 1976. You know, it's not that.
The fat man.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
A couple of things, Paul, and there's nice questions coming in from people on Twitter. I alerted them to the visit. And one question, and I brought this up before, what pools, I asked Don Johnson this, and what pools do you find the groups operating in predominantly?
Well, you know, that's the big change, you know, and we hit on that a little bit. You know, when these guys first started coming around and having success, you still could play in the same manners of, Well, they're not going to hit any pools. They're not going to hit every pool. So they're going to have the wind pool right, you know, initially. And then they gravitated into the exactas. But you could still do okay in the tries and supers. And really, not till recently, they didn't have much presence at all in the horizontals. But like I stated before, they're getting better at the predictability of what things are going to pay based on all the other scenarios. And I also think that there is at least one group that is, going through every pool and making sure that the market is correct in all of them based on the other markets. They're taking the one pool and basing on the other. And I think it doesn't matter what happened, actually. I think that this case proved that as well, because Firenze Fire was 7-2 in all the other markets. But when this win bet came in at the last minute, it still cracked his exactas down to where he went 5-2 in the exactas based on the imputed odds. He was 5-2. Now, exact and win don't translate perfectly, but I don't think it's so close to me that, and the fact that there was, publicly these exact prices, what they went to in the last flash was publicly all over the internet, so you got to see exactly how they got bet. And if you analyze it, it is in the seconds after, which we now know through the Finley article, the win bets were made. So, we don't have to see the tote report to know that those exactas all got tanked with similar numbers right after these win bets were made. So somebody had to, that's how fast these totes work. these computer models work, that in a second after, they can take the money that was bet to win and 2 seconds later analyze it and make a bet on the exactas. And that's a little scary, but that's the environment that we're living in. And that happened in this case, like I say, it's a little scary if you're how you go about playing against them, So, but to answer the question that you asked me, the horizontals, I still believe, are the ones that they're having the most trouble with. The pick threes, the pick fours, pick fives. Clearly, the pick fives. I don't think they've gotten to that one yet.
Well, the concern, of course, is somehow, if and when.
Before you say that, Steve, but you know how smart horse players are? I get a little flack for this, but because I always say horse players are the smartest people I know. But if you watch what's happened, horse players have gravitated to pick fives.
Yep.
they know. It's like maybe it's instinctive, but it's still, they know. You got smart people playing. That's why I don't think it's not a coincidence that pick fives have become so popular.
Well, plus the way the pricing structure, a lot of them are 15% takeout, very attractive, 50% increment versus the $2 pick six. So there's a lot of efficiencies and opportunities.
The 50-cent probably works against people, but you're right, no doubt.
A couple of follow-ups to the environment, and I've said repeatedly, Paul, with you and when Maury himself visits, Maury Wolf warned the industry around 2000, 2001 of this specter and what the industry needed to do to be prepared. Now the cow is not only out of the barn, the cow has been cut up and is on plates. 20%, 24%, 22% of total handle. Is there a way, or should the industry, try to harness the amount of money from this area? We're we hear that Tampa and Oakland limit access to the group, you know, the groups, to their pools. What's your thought about where the industry should respond? You know, you mentioned Craig Burnick. You're involved in the think tank program that Craig has spearheaded. What is the answer? And then we'll talk about, you know, how everyday players, you know, how they could maybe poach inefficiencies in this environment.
That was the word I was looking for earlier, inefficiency. Sorry about that.
Right.
You know, I think the future, the future of racing, I've been a little bit hesitant to say this, but since you asked me, I'm and because of my affiliation with the Racing Ideas, and I've put this this idea up to Craig, and I think the right way for it to be countered is to give more weapons to the players, you know, and the everyday players are the ones that are threatened the most by this. You know, one of the things that was so great to me about racing when I first was around it in the early days is that there was, you know, contrary to public opinion, there was lots of people who so-called beat the game that were not professional players, but had a chance to win at any time and were basically break even. You know, it wasn't their occupation, but they found a hobby, that a great hobby, a great mental challenge where they could, wager dollars and not be at any risk to lose money, you know. And I think that's why racing thrived in that time frame. And since then, we have been losing that just a little by little with, you know, numerous of reasons why. And I think this is the latest, and this is the biggest threat to those players, us everyday players that are going out there who keep coming back every day because we can, you know. And so what we need to do is we need to get more weapons for the players, you know. What that means exactly, I think the players' technologies are lacking. You know, I would have thought in 2018 that I would have some kind of access either through my ADW, through my phone, of a little bit of a way to counter and be able to play in the same manner that the computer guys do. That I could be able to play a pick four for $7.50, and I can play another one for $2.50, and I can play a Superfecta for $24.20. I really don't have that capability right now. I guess I could if I wanted to dabble with file upload and make it a program, but the ease is not there. And I think we need to get that ability to the players. Now, what that entails exactly, there's a lot of different possibilities, and, you know, that's why it's the, you know, it's the United States. It's a, you know, everybody can come up with an idea, and the best one should win out. But I think for the players, the industry should adopt this thought process more. Like, I got to get, you know, when Steve Criss started the Racing Times, he said, I got to get more knowledge to the players, you know. And in 1991, it was, you know, let's give them more information that the Racing Form didn't give you. But in 2018, it's got to be betting. It's got to be the weapons that the players need now is a better betting tool. Some of the ADWs have gotten better at it, and you see some of these platforms are getting there, but we're not advancing like the CRWs are. And I think you got to keep that playing field pretty level. You know, I don't think it's fair to say, you know, we can't have CRWs. It's not fair to the track. It's not fair to free market. It's not fair to everything to say that, they have to be outlawed. Or, you know, I mean, perception-wise, it would be nice if they had a stop, a little earlier than everybody else. I think that would be fair. It's never going to happen. But I think, that would be a fair way. But I just think the only way to really counter it is to put more power in the player. in the hands of the player.
Can, well, and even with that approach, I mean, how well armed will we be with someone, you know, obviously you operate at a certain level. I mean, for the casual player, Paul, I don't want people listening, you know, hearing this and understanding what happened Saturday and then thinking to themselves, I can't compete. And there are niches that I'm sure and hope that, you know, leaves room for, you know, for the casual player and even the serious player. I mean, the most troubling responses to a high profile incident like this are the serious players, you know, people that say, how am I supposed to, you know, people that are putting real money, serious money through the windows, and they're the ones that are, you know, that are exasperated.
I'm glad you made that point, too, because it goes back to what you said to me earlier. This was a perfect storm scenario. Keep that in mind. You know, Mendelsohn and Noble Indy and Seahenge all ran out. You know, so we're talking about a scenario that where the models were going to do well in. I'm not so sure that they're right. It's what I said earlier. You know, I kind of go along with what Marshall Graham said, that Mendelsohn was good odds at 3-2. You know, he just didn't win. You know, if he had won, it wouldn't have been, you know, this scenario. This is one of these that played out right. So I don't want to give the perception that these guys are hitting every single race. I mean, they're the one thing that they have done is they made it. They have made advances so that they're hitting at a better strike rate. But this was a scenario which was the perfect storm for almost anybody in that, you know, from that group. And they don't always win. So that is a good point that you made out. And it can get lost when you're trying to analyze it against. And I will say this. I had a firsthand look of when these things started coming about. And my theory back then, I think, is still right, that these models will never out-handicap me. And I would say that to everybody that's listening, that they are not going to find the angles that you've worked for years and be as good as you on those angles, you know. So if we keep the playing field even close to level, the players will be able to survive because I don't think they can out-handicap us. And I thought it then, and I still think that. So, and I don't think that's going to change. Even if with this AI stuff and the people that think that the artificial intelligence is going to handicap. Because I think that handicapping is not just, this is one of the things when, you know, I'm a math person, but I always say there's an art to handicapping. You know, and I think the math people sometimes lose that. There is a feel, there is an art, and that's what makes it so great, you know, and it's important. That feel is important. I'm never going to waver in my belief in that, it's not the greatest thing to handicap like a robot. There is benefits in being a human being in handicapping, you know.
well put. Well, Paul, I as always, I'm so appreciative, and you know, during the summer we can follow up, but I thought it was vital because I really sensed the outrage, and I know that there's a backdrop, you know, involving high percentage winners on the training side.
That definitely intensified it, and we really didn't get into that,
right?
Which is probably a smart thing by both of us, but that doesn't help either. You know, I mean, if, you know, the thing that's probably hurt the sport of racing, not necessarily the gambling part, is these high percentage trainers. Whether by whether by, I think by legal means, much more than illegal means, but even through legal means, you know, they don't have a good impact on racing. Their perception is bad on about six different levels. So you throw that into on this race that the horse who actually wins runs a lifetime best figure, you know, somewhat predictably, but has a dazzling performance after winning 50% of his races for a couple months, and you really have a scenario where people could become outraged, you know, and that it's not I don't find them at fault for feeling that way, you know, because it doesn't you know, there's a sniff test there too, and it doesn't, you know, something's not right. But unfortunately, what happens is it goes down, you know, a can of worms, you know, that sometimes isn't right, you know, and sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, you know, and that's a whole different story.
Well, you know, one other question before we wrap up that came in from a listener, and this is important and an interesting perspective. If the Battler has info on four horses in a six horse race and gets beat, who buys his dinner?
He's not buying. Doesn't matter even if one of his four won, he wouldn't be buying. He's got all the bases covered. That's a real. You talk about. They will never catch up to Battler in the efficiencies of eating. You know, he's got that market covered. He's had it. He's the master of that one.
Computer robotic consumption. That's it. Paul, too much fun. And a week from Friday, of course, we'll be together at Saratoga.
Yeah, have a great meet, Steve.
You too.
Yeah, but now it's done. I can get back to preparing for that.
Exactly. Dig in, and we'll get you live. And when's Dookie come into town? The contest?
Monday.
Oh, he's coming right for the opener.
Oh yeah, he's going to be here longer this year too. I guess he's coming for a month. So
wow, there'll
be a lot of Duke. Hopefully, you won't see him yelling at jockeys.
Well, I can't. There's no stopping that, at least on the internet. Well, then there'll be plenty of Batiste brother visits on the show and on television, where the public cannot get enough. And Paul, the response to this, people are so appreciative of access to you and guys like you and your brother and Maury and people that are, you know, really the outreach and the ability to ask these questions of players of your ilk, it's invaluable to everybody's understanding of the sport. And I'm so appreciative.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, Steve.
Not at all. Paul Matisse, everybody. And you follow Paul, of course, on Twitter, Paul Matisse Jr. And Duke, the two feeds, Paul's feed on Twitter versus Duke's feed, they're a little different. there's a couple of different tones that are set when it comes to the Matisse. There's nobody like them. And, of course, it all trickles down from the patriarch, from the one and only, the person most responsible, Chick. The father who started all of the great handicapping, the comprehension and execution by the Matisses, and it's being handed down to the next generation too. A great 45 minutes with Paul Matisse. Let's take a break. We'll do about the same thing next with Sid Fernando. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Been a very good couple of weeks. The Hillendale Flashback got his first winner. Talked about that yesterday. How about Midnight Loot? Just continues to. Midnight Loot has elevated his profile for next year. That should be on everybody's list to consider. And we'll talk about the sale and whatever else is on Sid's mind. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool Fun in the Sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete Fun in the Sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.